Welcome to The Unconventional Path, entrepreneurship and innovation stories and ideas. Hello, I'm Bala Musitz.
And I'm Mike Wasserman.
Hey, Mike. Today, we are excited to be joined by Andrew Hutton. Andrew is founder and CEO of Day One, which helps new entrepreneurs launch businesses. It's like an incubator, and he helps entrepreneurs that are sort of outside of the tech world. So more like small businesses, like pizza parlors and, you know, things that the average sort of normal person might start, and not someone who's trying to raise $10 million in venture capital funding to get going. And he combines his experience in the tech world, which he has a history of that. He also worked in venture capital for a while. And that's where he recognized there was this gap. And so he had this idea of starting Day One to help entrepreneurs get launched.
Bala, I'm really excited about this guest. When you told me that Andrew was going to be on, I looked up his company, and you know, this is a really kind of cool niche and a really, I think, unserved need, which to me makes a lot of sense. And it's great that there's somebody out there, I think, providing these type of services to, I think, what we would call the non-glamorous side of entrepreneurship, where there's a real need. So this is great. All right, without further ado, let's get right to it and give your interview with Andrew Hutton a listen.
Hello, listeners. Bala here. Today's guest is Andrew Hutton. He is the founder and CEO of Day One. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Bala, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, great. So let me ask you a question. If you're at a social event, a non-work social event, and someone comes up to you, they introduce themselves to you, and then they ask you, Andrew, what do you do? How do you answer that question?
I usually say, are you ready for 10 minutes? I usually very much have to prepare them, or do you want to talk startups all night? So I definitely sometimes start there. But no, I tell folks that I'm in the business of helping early stage entrepreneurs. I've been doing that for the last few years, first as, you know, where I was before building and launching Day One. I was a place called Human Ventures, and we launched businesses, and I was supporting the entrepreneurs doing it, guiding them, pushing them, prodding them, helping them, putting on the gloves and getting into to the work with them. And then Day One is an extension of that. I just love doing it so much. I said, let's go try and build something on my own that would let me keep supporting entrepreneurs, keep helping entrepreneurs, but actually, here's the twist, but really open up the gates, really help more different types of entrepreneurs. And, you know, I'm most interested in helping people who come from really outside of tech and venture, right? Folks who come from corporate careers, who come from industry, maybe tech adjacent. You know, it's hard to escape the sort of aura of Silicon Valley these days, but you know, I know a lot more folks are outside of the bubble than inside, but we're in a golden age of entrepreneurship. And so in some ways I see Day One as being a place for folks to, an entree, a launch pad into building their own thing, onto entrepreneurship. And so, yeah, I'm supporting entrepreneurs, and I love to support new entrepreneurs. Maybe that's the quick way I should say it each time.
Yeah. So as an entrepreneur, you have started an entrepreneurial endeavor.
Exactly. It's very meta. It's very meta.
Yeah. So tell me about that. So where did the inspiration come from? Okay, I'm going to blaze off on my own, right? So the sort of accelerator, incubator space is pretty crowded, right? Yep. I mean, they're everywhere. And full disclosure, I used to run the incubator at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute.
Amazing.
Back in the 90s, right? So it was, they claim it was the first university-based incubator. And I was there subsequent years. And so I know a little bit about what you guys do, but there's a lot of them around now. So,
there
you
really
know,
is.
As any entrepreneur, when you're starting a new endeavor, you need to think about competition. Why are people going to pick me versus somebody else? So share with us how you sort of think about that.
Absolutely. I think an incubator in the cloud is not a terrible way to envision us. Although I think you have to, like you said, you know what an incubator is. The model has been around for a while. I think they are great and they serve the niche. Accelerators seem to have sort of overtaken the idea of an incubator. There's an accelerator in every city. There's big fancy accelerators that get a lot of press. And you're absolutely right. So where I was coming from was from one of these institutions, right? I was inside a what we call a venture studio, but an early stage venture capital firm that was building and incubating our own businesses. So from the inside, it was really easy to see that the vast majority of entrepreneurs are not even getting close to these institutions, right? The vast majority. And in some ways, a lot of folks from inside venture capital have the blinders on, where our world is defined by the entrepreneurs that we support, the tech, the folks who speak the one language. But if you just take, there's a number of ways to take a step back, you know, order of magnitude, it's at most 1% of all the entrepreneurial activity, right? It does not account for the folks building small businesses that will become big businesses, lifestyle businesses, bootstrappers, folks who are just building a coaching practice or an agency. In these days, that means a podcast or a newsletter, folks who are starting a pizza parlor or a car dealership. Entrepreneurship is so much bigger than the tech bubble. And I'm sort of on the inside. I'm here. What I see day one being, as a, like you said, a differentiator, is how do we take all the things that are largely necessary? You know, it takes a village to build a business, right? I'll come back the other side for a second. It takes a village to build something, right? Nobody actually builds in a vacuum. If you think there's this like hero story of somebody, you know, launching a business, I don't know who you might have noticed IPOing recently. No, they came from somewhere. They came from a home. They probably had a whole VC ecosystem, whether they're from Silicon Valley or here in New York or wherever they might be. And so what we're trying to build at day one is that ecosystem, that village, that home, for entrepreneurs who don't come from the bubble, who are coming from wherever they're coming from, building whatever they're going to build. And, you know, I think entrepreneurship is just this thing that should be open, accessible, democratized. And yeah, we're trying to be that place.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to it. I struggle when I want to, you know, get passionate about it to get it down into those few words. Tell me where we go next, because I'd love to kind of unpack it as you see fit.
Yeah, well, this is great because, you know, I ran an incubator and then I ran a VC firm. I started a venture capital fund, early stage, seed stage venture fund, yeah. Which is still around today, doing quite well. They're based in the city. So I understand exactly what you're saying about sort of VC-funded entrepreneurs represent, you know, 1%. Of all the entrepreneurs, and you have to fit a certain flavor. You have to be of a certain flavor to sort of get in that door. And if you're not of that flavor, it's still a great business thing to do, right?
Yes.
And I can remember sitting through many pitches and saying, you got yourself a great business here. It's not a venture fundable business, but it's exactly. A great business, right? So stop knocking on the venture door, because
exactly.
Venture gets all the PR. It gets all of the PR. Right. But it accounts for just a small percentage of the actual businesses. So this notion of what you're doing, I think, is really good. So to help me unpack this a little bit, let's go back to Andrew as a young lad. So where'd you grow up? Talk to me about your journey.
I don't think I grew up in Connecticut, you know, the farther reaches of the New York City suburbs. Grew up in what was definitely Giants land, even though I became a Patriots fan. I was a traitor to most of the people around me. That was a great place to be. I'd say, you know, fast forward to some formative times, I went through undergrad and was going to, you know, thought I wanted to be a lawyer. And luckily by the time I ended undergrad, decided not to be a lawyer. It sort of, you know, happened slowly than all at once. And I realized it was probably an impulse decision to think I wanted to be a lawyer, and a better impulse decision to say, no, let's go on whatever the next thing is. The decision to be undecisive, that definitely started me off to say, like, where do I go? How do I navigate this world of business? How do I, who's building stuff? I didn't want to do finance. I didn't want to do law. This is the 21-year-old thinking about their life decisions. Sure. I can do, you know, was never going to be a doctor. Tried being a lawyer, didn't want to do finance. I thought that was like all business was. So I was like, what's left? Again, almost everything is left, right? Those exactly. are not the end all be alls of industry.
Right. What's left? And like everything?
Yeah. So I kind of went and said, let's do everything. I think I got a good start. I got started both at in grad school at Parsons, so it's design school, but I got a business degree from a design school. So putting kind of both sides of the brain together from early on, that that was very formative, as well as getting my start at Accenture. So I was a consultant for about 4 years. I got to see how the business world worked, got to add a lot of experiences up. And yeah, it was kind of the sum of those two journeys interweaving, grad school, design thinking, design and management consulting, leading to eventually innovation consulting. A lot of buzzwords here, but sort of parlayed all that, said, hey, I'm a consultant. I want to get actually close to the action, right? I have all these great ideas, or I'm paid to have these ideas with clients and customers, but nothing gets built. So the real builders are these entrepreneurs, right? So there was another sort of moment. It was a bit of a, just a, man, entrepreneurs are the real builders. Let's go hang out with them, right? And found my way to this place called Human Ventures, where the journey really accelerated. Almost directly leading to day one, because I learned pretty much all the tools of the trade inside of that venture firm, and they get applied inside of day one.
Yeah. So what did you do at Human Ventures? What was your role there?
Yeah, I was our first business designer, which means I was designing, thinking about how things should come together, businesses, right? How should a business work? And we got to paint from a blank canvas. So the way our model worked, we would recruit an entrepreneur who was at the zero stage, blank canvas stage. You know this, no entrepreneur has nothing. They have a notebook of ideas. They have burning problems to solve. You know, we were usually working with entrepreneurs who were onto their second or third thing. So, you know, they did their one thing and they kind of accrued all this sort of, I want to, you know, solve a big problem next. So that's where I would get folks who are at the very beginning wanting to solve something big. And I had an amazing role. I was their Sherpa, their guide. I knew the innovation process. I knew design thinking. I could lead them down this kind of ambiguous road of nothing to something. And, you know, sometimes that looked like very widely exploring multiple, you know, business ideas. Sometimes the founder sort of knew where they wanted to be, and we went deep and pivoted around until we got somewhere. But the goal, you know, was to help these entrepreneurs go from nothing to something, and then to put the meat on the bones of what that something was. So where do we start building? How do we start to test and then acquire customers? You know, we were building towards the venture playbook, so we had to think about, you know, where does this scale? How do we think about the team growing? What's the funding need to look like? So we basically got, again, at some ways we were painting a blank canvas, and then we'd start to do a little paint by numbers. What's the market size? What's the problem? What's the solution? What's the growth strategy? And we'd fill all these buckets in, and the founder would then, you know, I would get them to lead them to the pitch. They would pitch, you know, inside of our firm. We sort of had the two sides, the build and the investment side. I started to, you know, lead the build team over after my first boss left, and continued to basically take entrepreneurs and these nascent startups up to a pitch, and then I'd get to go back and do it again, which was just like the most fun.
Yeah. So in day one, what was your biggest challenge in sort of getting that off the ground?
Yeah.
Because it's sort of a nebulous concept, I mean, in some ways, right? It's not like I want to start a pizza parlor, right? Or I want to do a new kind of widget, right?
I mean, I think you then, thank you. You nailed the biggest challenge, which is how do we truly articulate the fact that it's new? You know, we don't have a brand. No one knows what we are by like just knowing who we are. So, yeah, we have to define all that. We're still very young ourselves, and luckily, we've tapped into sort of a rich vein of the zeitgeist. This is happening. Entrepreneurs are coming out of the woodwork. You know, the pandemic and COVID have accelerated a lot of things, including this, right? Over the summer when we launched, you know, it was really, things were shaking up, right? People were losing jobs. People were, you know, moving out of cities. And I think everyone sort of felt both, you know, it wasn't like a renewed sense of optimism, but it was a sort of renewed sense of, you know, let's make some moves, right? And so, you know, over the summer we recruited our first cohort, and, you know, to be fair, our, you know, there's you know, when a startup has early success, it's often, you know, there's always a watch out on the other side of it, right? Because that early success is almost certainly not what's going to be repeatable, what's going to be the thing that takes you to the promised land of, you know, a sustainably successful business. So luckily, we had a good kind of wind at our backs when we launched in the summer. I'll tell you, we learned so much from our first group. Like those first members of our program were, they're like family. They are like they're founders. They're founding members of what Day One is. And you know, we feel fortunate that we were along for the ride to support them and help them grow. They told us what we were, right? They told us where we were adding value. They told us who we should be, you know, targeting next. And so, yeah, we're definitely working through the articulation of who we are best serving. Because I, you know, I'll step back from Day One and talk to myself as an entrepreneur. You have to pick a niche. You have to be focused. You can't boil the ocean. So Day One started as, we're the support for all these early stage founders who've never had support. We're support for the other 99%. By definition, we picked the un-niche. We picked the rest of everybody. And so it's been a journey to figure out, okay, we are really serving folks, like I kind of mentioned earlier, is the latest articulation of this mental and sort of learning journey, not just mental, because we've been building with our customers, learning so much. Folks who will have these experiences, these life experiences, entrepreneurship is somewhere on the horizon. Either it's been, you know, overdue and they're jumping and they need somewhere to build, or they're feeling the sort of, you know, pending sort of buildup of this is where I'm going next. And yeah, we're here to support those sort of newly minted entrepreneurs and give them the tools and the place to build.
Yeah. Very nice. So did you secure funding to launch your thing off the ground, or is this a bootstrap thing?
It's, you know, yes and yes, right? We did secure some funding. We basically pulled, you know, from friends and family around, essentially, right? Folks who knew us, myself and my co-founder Rahul, who believed in us, believed in the business. We raised this little bit of money sort of after we had recruited our first cohort, before we had launched it. So we found like that tight window to say, this is working enough. You know, we have some belief in us. But, you know, we don't treat this as a venture scale or a venture kind of trajectory business, right? We're not here to try to go sell first round on the next big thing. You know, we might raise more money, but it'll be on probably different terms, hopefully our terms, right? Hopefully, you know, we intend to go build a real business that just cash flows enough. So, you know, at some point, you know, debt is in our future. At some point, different types of funding mechanisms. It's a super sticky subject that I am glad I've lived through, you know, recently, because most founders I talk to in their first 3-6 months, they sort of think, okay, I must go get that money. And I'm like, no, you have to build a business. And yes, money is important. At some point you'll maybe need it to get over a hump or even survive, but money is not the thing. Like you can't just think you have an idea and therefore it deserves money and therefore you'll build a business. Right. You, at the very least, you have to show you've got something. You know, you show you can build, that you have something of value, you have a reason for taking in some money to do something with it. So no, we're trying to live what we preach and be a sort of hybrid. Right, got our first 75 grand in the bank, and now we're gonna go pretty far with that.
So if I'm a budding entrepreneur and I come knocking on your door at Day One, is it dayone.com?
It's joindayone.com.
Joindayone.com. So I send you an email. I say, hey, Andrew, I'm thinking about starting a business. Take me through the process. Take me through your vetting process, what you look for, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are, unlike, again, probably everyone else in the venture world, we're not really that interested in what you're building. It's not my job, nor is it that interesting to me at the start to say like, oh man, that's a bad idea or that's a good idea, right? I will tell you that once you're in, and I will hopefully lead you down a path. And I say me, I mean our whole system will lead you down a path to seeing if it's really a good idea, your business, help you pivot if it's not, right? I don't wanna lead you in, you know, we're not here to just give pats on the back, right? So no, we don't really focus on the strength or scale or anything of the idea. It's purely the entrepreneur. And what we're looking for is, again, also not some sort of they are this founder incarnate, right? We're looking for people who have a trajectory, who have the ability to learn, who have horsepower, they're intelligent, they're articulate, they're ambitious, they're interesting, right? So again, it's closer to potential than it is sort of, you know, an outcome driven form. So that's what we're looking for on the founder side, right? The other side, actually, it's two sides of the founder. It's the sort of intellect, the entrepreneurial potential, along with being a great community member for day one, right? If you are here to take and you're not here to collaborate and give, one, I don't think you're going to go far in general, but we really don't want you in day one, right? It's kind of that clear. We very much are building a ecosystem that is community driven. And it's not just self-serving for day one that people help each other. We know it's the sort of gift that keeps on giving long term. So we very much recruit for good people joining our program.
Yeah, someone once described that to me as it's sort of like a bank account. You have to make several deposits before you can make withdrawals.
Yeah, yeah. And I, again, back to my, I have a very core premise, right? I'm not, again, the author of this, it takes a village, right? It really, really does. And your personal village is the sum of the people who trust you, who believe in you, and you're going to have, you know, maybe those come from the previous jobs you've had or people you've helped out along the way, right? But you make deposits before you, before you take it out.
So earlier you said a cohort. So this sounds like it's a cohort. There's sort of like a class that
it is
sort of a structured program that we'll go through. It's not sort of a come and go as you please. It's much more of a structured program.
Yeah. And honestly, that might be one of the bigger differences to what I, you know, when I think of an incubator, I think of a place that is incubating. There's a long gestation period. You go to usually a physical place, right? There's the desks, there's an ecosystem. A lot of those pieces, ecosystem, community. We are not set up quite like that, right? We are set up as a time-bound, cohort-based program. So our program is an 8-week journey, and the primary reason that we use a time bound is not because we think entrepreneurship starts and ends in 8 weeks, right? It's actually much closer to an incubator. It's an ongoing thing. You need this community. And I'll get to that because day one has an evergreen aspect to it. But the 8 weeks is meant to be where you focus your energy, right? We're corralling the community together. And it takes that amount of, like, that time period allows us to ask you to lean in, to collaborate, to be a community, and to go hard on your ideas, right? To not dilly-dally, kind of through the program. Yes, you can pretty much audit everything if you'd really like to, but I think you get the most out of it by treating it like, you know, we're going to kind of like a gym. We're here to kick your butt a little bit along the way, right? So 8-week journey is the sort of entree to day one. But in that journey, we are pushing you to build your business, right? We're pushing you, guiding you, teaching you, you're learning, you're collaborating. But it is the business building journey, right? It's taking an idea and unpacking it, putting it into the world and making it real with prototypes and MVPs, talking to your customer and getting their feedback, pitching your idea and forming a narrative. So, you know, what I've unpacked through, again, a number of years doing this is what are the core muscles that entrepreneurs need to repeat over and over again? We're going to go through those once or twice in this 8-week program, right? And now you're armed, you're able to go do this. You've pushed your business forward immensely. And your community is around you now. These people who are believers, they don't go away. So day one has an evergreen alumni aspect to it as well. And, you know, we're early. Who knows what happens down the road? We know there's more problems and challenges that you face. Who knows what day two looks like? We'll figure that out over time.
So if I sign up for this at the end of my 8-week gig with you guys, what do you hope I have at the end of that? What sort of the tangible things that I, as an entrepreneur, would have at the end of that?
Yeah, very tangibly, you'll have built something. You'll have talked to your customers in a clearly structured way that you probably didn't before. So what I know you're going to come away from doing these entrepreneurial build, test, learn activities is you'll gain real insights and real progress and real direction about your business that you will never have had from just thinking about it, from just talking about it, whatever it might be, right? So your business will become clear. your business will be advanced. You'll see it come to life before your eyes. And this happens for anybody, whether you're at the very beginning, this is the first time you're doing it, or if you've got an MVP built, if you've already started talking to customers, we're pushing you along the way. So the idea of, you know, eight months and 8 weeks sort of applies towards what's the outcome here. We see a lot of founders essentially becoming investable at the end of these 8 weeks, right? That's not hard and fast. I will never say that, you know, 8 weeks to money, right? I don't try to sell that. I don't believe in it. But by going through this, the stuff, the program, you're pushing and pressure testing the pieces that are needed to be investable. Yeah. Frankly, when you want it.
And when you say investable, you're thinking debt, Kickstarter, right?
Exactly.
Friends and family.
Right?
You're not thinking VC.
No, I'm thinking your first foray into the capital raising, yeah. Right? So Kickstarter, exactly. Friends and family. There's a whole other podcast we got to record on sort of this like unbundling of early stage venture. And I think it's fair to say early stage venture is on the other side of some of these other capital sources, right? You should try to raise money from your customers even before you.
It's the best way.
Raise money. It's the best way.
I have always said the best way to raise money is from your customers.
Bela, you're on it. You're on it. And it keeps your optionality. Right? Once you take a VC check, the clock is ticking. Life is different.
You're on a certain set of train tracks, man, and you can't get off. You might get kicked off, but you can't get off.
Exactly. They've thrown you off the cliff, and you better build that plane before you hit. So we see people. We try to give people a platform to make their case, right? But again, we're not the funding shop, right? We're not here this is where you get money. We're here, this is where you build a business and come away with a firm foundation for whatever you want to do next. Yeah.
What are the economics for me as an entrepreneur? So if I want to sign up for this,
super simple.
Does it cost me? Yeah, take me through that.
Cost you a buck, but no equity, nothing on that front, right? So we're trying to switch the mold, right? And well, we're switching it. We're saying this is not an investment. This is not an equity transaction. You could sort of say we could give you money and take equity. Lots of founders. Well, again, it's easy to unpack why that could. You know, a lot of founders love that and want that. But if you're not going to go venture, that's not useful for you. A lot of founders, it's not the greatest deal anymore, right? So let's maintain optionality, you know, figure out what kind of investment you need down the road, right? So we're just not investors. We don't have an equity transaction. You're too early. We're not exploitative. We believe in you. We would love to, you know, see you grow huge, and we might be kicking ourselves down the road, but we'll have known you along the way. It's sort of a fun thing we lean on. But no, we're very clearly a fees for a service, right? And it highly aligns us. Every single fellow in day one, you go through an application process, right? It's not an open community, but you know, you apply and you pay $9.99 for our upcoming cohorts in 2021. And and we're here to serve you. Every ounce of our energy is in every single fellow.
Yeah.
It's
virtual, yeah. Right? So I don't have to be in Brooklyn.
Exactly. You can be wherever you find. We have folks coming from Europe, Middle East, India, nice. South America. If you come from Bali, the time zone might be a little hard, but otherwise we make it work for you.
Right. And if you had to describe your ideal candidate or prospect, how would you characterize the ideal prospect?
They are somebody who's you know, whether it's lived experience or professional experience, has come to some sort of entrepreneurial passion, right? And I truly mean, you could be a high school or a college senior. I don't think we have any high school students just yet. A college senior, or you could be a 20-year vet. Some passion that says, I'm going to solve something. I think the it's in the air that you can go do that yourself, right? Entrepreneurship is possible, accessible, until it's not, right? So it's someone with this passion that's built from experience, built from, you know, personal or professional lived life, and is self-aware and knows enough to know they need that village behind them, right? That why would you jump into what is probably the newest, scariest thing of your life without some people behind you, right? You you know, you wouldn't do that with any other career change, with any other, you know, big endeavor. And so, but entrepreneurship, it's, that's been the sort of status quo.
Yeah.
So someone's self-aware to know, I should have a trainer. I should have somebody in my corner.
Yeah.
And we're building just the best ecosystem for that.
Yeah. So is this, this 8-week journey that we would take together, is it like a buffet? I pick and choose what I want, or is it more of a rigid kind of program?
It's a yes and again, right? We provide a buffet of different ways you can interact with your peers, with mentors, experienced founders, with investors who will hear a pitch and give you feedback when you're way too early to ever really have that shot otherwise. For folks who are, you know, teaching workshops and talks. So every week there was a bit of a menu. There was a bit of a buffet. It is structured across 8 weeks with a bit of a learning journey. But then at the core of it, really, it is the core of it. And I would hope some very large percentage of every fellowship goes through this journey. We're a little too early to know exactly the uptake. Is a structured company building process, right? It is the steps you take when you go from idea to paper with a business model, from paper to customer and talk to them, from customer to prototype to customer again, building and testing to a narrative and a pitch.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you kind of, there is a moment where you can sort of turn off the one thing I find far too often, almost universal, is the analysis paralysis. The ambiguity of early stage is a special kind of hard. You don't know exactly the next step to take. So we take that down. We basically say, hey, listen, trust us. We're going to tell you what to do. You don't have to make these meta decisions about what sprint should I be on this week or next week. We're just going to go do it. And we know these are the important things. We're putting them in the right order. Afterwards, you're going to now be able to mess it up. You're going to be able to do more of one thing and less of another and double down hard in one space. But we're going to give you the stuff. You're going to push everything forward. You're going to learn. You're going to do. And you're going to come out the other side with that progression. And with, like I said, I treat it like a bookshelf. You can add these books to your bookshelf and pull them off whenever you need them. So yeah, we try to make a both and, because the world of entrepreneurship cannot be that cookie cutter,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we allow for that.
Yeah. Well, this is fascinating. I'm trying to limit these to about 30 minutes or so. So we've hit the
30. We could go forever, Bela.
Yes,
I
can.
I know.
Right. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. And it's one of the reasons we do the podcast, right? The whole idea of the podcast was this notion of bringing people like yourself and other entrepreneurs who've and describe their journey, and you kind of making that available for people to consume. Again, we don't talk about, I don't think we've had any firm on here that has been received venture funding.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going after a different slice of that pie.
Yes.
Right. We're going after, as you are. So I get it. I get it.
Amazing. I you're doing the Lord's work, Bela. I'm honored to be able to share a little bit. I would love to run it back and talk about all the other things, right? Why is this so necessary? Where did we go? I'd love to interview you and hear about some of the journey you've been on. And
yeah.
I don't know if you've done that for your podcast yet, but no, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, same here. So if someone wants to get a hold of Andrew Hutton, what's the best way to do that?
You should check out www.joindayone.com. It's got as much information as you can find, but I'll tell you, there's a little button at the bottom that says talk to a team member that goes to my inbox. So so you could write me, fill out the form like you're emailing me. Honestly, it's andrew@joindayone.com if you're into just like hitting it up. I'd love to chat with you. We're in we're in stay close to customer mode. You know, we're definitely not too big for our britches to come talk. So please reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Oh, excellent, excellent, excellent. So folks, I'll have all of that information in the show notes. Andrew, you've been a great guest. I really enjoyed this. I think we could go on for several hours here, I'm sure.
I think so.
And maybe at some point in time, we'll have you back on the show and get an update on how things are going. And we'll take it from there. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Bela. Cheers.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Wow, Bela, what a great story. I thought this was a fantastic interview. It just struck me, I really do feel like Andrew found an underserved niche. What do you think?
Well, a couple of things here, Mike. Number one, finding an underserved niche is rule number one for being an entrepreneur. right? If you want to build a successful business, you have to figure out a way to sort of differentiate yourself from others in a way that has value to your customers or to the folks who you think will be your customers. And in many ways, this reminds me of what you and I are trying to do in this podcast, right? This podcast is about providing information and helping. Our initial idea on this, and continues to be our concept, is helping the sort of entrepreneurs who have the everyday businesses, the small businesses, and not the ones that are out there looking for to raise $10 million in venture capital and have an IPO, et cetera. There are lots and lots of resources for those folks. But for the person who wants to open a coffee roasting business, or, you know, look through our guest list for the 100 or so episodes we've had, and you'll see this common theme of people who had a house painting business, a coffee roasting business, right? A cafe, shared space, shared office space. Those are all sort of grassroots entrepreneurial endeavors that people have started. And there's not a lot of resources for those people. So this is exactly the niche that Andrew's going after as well. He said, hey, you know what? There's a whole large segment of the entrepreneurial community that's typically underserved. In the existing way, they're served sort of many times by the municipality, the county or the town or the city might have an economic development organization that is targeted as helping those folks. But I think Andrew's trying to turn that crank up a few times to a few higher levels with his day one program.
Yeah, he's got that really nice background in business design. He's got the MBA with the design mixed in and worked in the consulting world. And he really had this interesting mix of experiences. And I loved his story about how he didn't really know what he wanted to do. And then he kind of, you know, X'd off finance and X'd off law. And right, there was all these other things left. And this is really cool. One of his central kind of premises on this was this idea of community and allowing entrepreneurs to develop a community around them. This idea that nobody develops, nobody becomes an entrepreneur by themselves. And I think this is kind of unstated in the traditional world of incubators and VCs, but he's really brought it front and center. What are your thoughts about this idea of community when you're founding a business?
So I think this is something that we need to focus on more. And let me try to draw an analogy. If you think about some of the best higher education organizations, think about, let's just talk about MBAs, and let's talk about the Harvard MBA. And everyone says it's not necessarily the content, but it's that community that you build in the 2 years you spend together as a cohort working on your MBA. And it's those connections that pay off later in life. You know, so there's an example from higher ed. And I think we don't do that in business. We tend to be very almost isolated in business. And we have done things around here and in my past where we've done CEO dinners once a month, where we've gotten together small company CEOs in sort of a loose-knit group. Somebody hosts a dinner and all the CEOs sort of get together and, you know, share their stories, et cetera. And as a VC firm, we did that for a while. We sponsored those and we sort of helped facilitate those. And they were, I think, effective. And they still continue. So this notion of community is one that I think in the business world tends to shy away from. And I'm not sure why. I don't know if it's fear of competition or what sort of the ethos is, but we tend to shy away from it. And I think it's important that we do that more, because, you know, I even reflect back on connections I've made, and I reflect back on my career. And this is how I think about this, right? So I've had, I think, over my career, 40 plus years, 11 different jobs. And I have applied to a lot of, I replied to a lot of classified ads, right? I would read the Wall Street Journal looking for jobs, and I'd send off my resume. And out of those 11 jobs, I got just one of them via the sending off your resume route. All of the other ones came from my community, right? people I knew who made a connection for me or knew of something and passed it on to me, etc. So I think this notion of community is real important. And it's not only important in our personal lives, I think it's important in our business lives. And I think as a business person, the best thing you can do is figure out and build your community and the structure within whether it be regional or whether it be national, it doesn't matter, whether it be industry specific or geographic specific. Again, I don't think it matters, but build that community. And I think that this is what Andrew does in his organization, because he puts people together, and naturally you're gonna develop relationships and friendships from that, and sort of have a community that just evolves from it.
Interesting, Bela. I couldn't agree more with you. My last kind of question for you is, again, kind of putting on your VC hat and your incubator director hat. So, you know, interesting, he chooses not to take a percentage. It's kind of a flat fee, right? Almost a tuition model. Do you think that's sustainable? And is that going to work for him in the long run? What's your thought?
So I think here's my view on that. And I think I said this, I can't remember if we talked about this off microphone with him or it was part of the interview. But when I was at RPI running their incubator, their university-based incubator at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, we did not take an equity stake in the companies. And it was in the late 80s and 90s and early 2000s, it became very fashionable to start that these incubators take a percentage, right? And with the notion of, oh, we're gonna cash in and make a big pile of money. And I reflected back on all of the companies that came through the RPI incubator, and there was many of them. We never took an equity stake. And we had, I think, three companies that went public, and this is over 40 years, I think three companies that went public, a pretty good handful, almost a dozen that got bought. So people had good exits, right? The founders mm-hmm. and owners had good exits. And almost all of them made a very nice, large contribution back to the university mm-hmm. because they were thankful for the experience of what help they got and assistance they got in their early days. And I think that amount far exceeded any equity stakes we would have taken, because you're going to get the truth of it is you're going to get common shares. They're going to get diluted down to nothing. And there's this provision of called pay to play, which means that when a VC comes in, if you're a previous investor or shareholder, even if you have preferred shares, if you don't invest in this new round, they're going to force you to convert to common shares and mm-hmm. you basically get wiped out. So that's just the reality of that game. And we could do a whole episode on that, the intricacies of that, but that's for another time. So my point is that I think this is sustainable, assuming he provides good value add. And because people will remember, right? People will remember. It's just like universities, right? Some universities get a lot of donations from their alumni because their alumni are thankful and appreciate the experience they had at the university.
And yeah, it's almost like he should start a foundation that goes along with this that you could donate to.
Right.
Right? Because that's the difference between what he's doing, it's a for-profit company, and what we've been doing in academics, which is a nonprofit model. Right. Right? And the donations were important in the U.S. Yeah. model anyways.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Given the tax structure here in the United States, if you have a foundation, you know, your donations are tax deductible. So lots of things here in this country are driven by our tax codes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think he's doing a good job. I think it's, you know, it's still early. We'll see. These things are a challenge. They're a lot of work. They're difficult to do. But I like his energy. I like the way he sort of found this niche. He knows mm-hmm. what it is, right? And he's sticking to it. He's not going for the glory of, oh, I want to find the next IPO, right?
He's not going to be a millionaire from this. There's no way in heck, right?
Right. Right.
Right. This is a lifestyle business, right? In a lot of ways.
97% of businesses in this country fit this model. Mm-hmm. Only 3% fit the VC model.
Yep. Right? But lots of profitable businesses, right? I mean, we've talked to all these people in this 97% that do fine, right?
That's right.
They do fine.
They do they're adding value. Well.
Right. They're contributing to the tax base. They're employing people, right?
Right. But they don't get all the PR, right? The IPOs get all the PR. So the PR is skewed, but the impact by the smaller businesses is huge, and it's very important and critical to any vibrant economy.
Yeah, and you know, we're recording this and it's still in the COVID time essentially, and that's one of the good things that's stemmed from COVID, even though it's been horrible for a lot of small businesses, is I've just heard so many people say, oh, I've been trying to do business with these small businesses. I've been trying to order some takeout. I've been trying to order online from my local hardware store, things like that, that it's brought the importance of small businesses to the fabric of a community, I think, to the forefront. And hopefully that's something that once we get past COVID, that stays, right? As people remember how important these local businesses are to the sense of community. And maybe that's a little something here that he's helping to bring out. And if so, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to the earlier conversation, the discussion we had about community and the importance of community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think part of, again, culturally, the flight to the suburbs sort of, in many ways, disenfranchised the community in some respect, right? Or the community was sort of different. It was about your kids playing soccer together. That was the community. It wasn't really the community where you lived, mm-hmm. right? It was other factors. And I think that's coming back now. And I know they've done some programs around here, particularly over this holiday season, of shop local, you know, buy from mm-hmm. your local merchants. And there was just recently an article in the news that the local merchants have done quite well this year here, right? Because of that. And mm-hmm. and people are starting to appreciate that and sort of return of the value of community.
Yeah. Let's put that on the die. I think two things are takeaways from this, Bela. One is, I think we should get back together with Andrew Hutton in a year or 9 months or something and see how he's doing and see how this model is working. And I think it might be neat to do a whole episode on this idea of community and what it means. Because I think entrepreneurship, I think you made a really great point that entrepreneurship and community are intertwined mostly, right? This 80% or whatever percentage it is, right? 90% entwined with the community. And so maybe better understanding what community means and maybe even doing some comparisons between what community means in the US versus what it means here in Germany might be interesting to talk about for a half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good idea, Mike. As usual, you always have good ideas.
Yeah. All right, what do you think? Should we wrap it up?
I think so.
All right. Listeners, thanks for joining us today. We hope you found this episode as interesting and thought-provoking as we did. If you have questions about what we've discussed, please do get in touch with us. We are always happy to hear from you. Our email is bela.and.mike@gmail.com.
And please do subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. You can find the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting applications. Just hit the subscribe button. Hey, and if you really like it, love to hear from you, or even better yet, leave a review of the podcast. It helps other people find it as well. So, hey, Mike, until next time, I'll see you.
Thanks, Bela, from over here in Münster, Germany. See you soon.